Today on Animal House Radio, we are joined by the legendary and iconic frontman from Twisted Sister, Mr. D. Snyder. Listen in as the Animal House crew talks to D about his early career, his love of music, how the Beatles inspired him, how he hates shoveling snow when visiting his dad, and how Twisted Sister actually got his name, and so much more. And it all happens right here, right now on Animal House Radio.
Stations are tuned in to
5, 4, 4, 3, 3, 2, 1, 1, 1, 1. We have ignition. Strap in.
You're about to listen to
The Animal House.
You're nothing but an animal.
Your mother's an animal.
Show your food, you're an animal.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
They're animals anyway, so let them lose their souls.
I am not an animal.
You are an animal.
We are all animals, my lady.
I'm not an animal!
What do you care? You're an animal. You're an animal.
Yeah.
I'm an animal!
Yeah.
All aboard!
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
I feel the need for speed.
The opinions expressed by the hosts, callers, and guests are not those of Animal House Radio. Some of the material broadcast on Animal House Radio may not be suitable for listeners under the age of 18. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, this is Kelsey Grammer.
Hi, this is Katie Segal.
Hi, this is Joe Elliott.
Hey, it's Rick Springfield.
Hey, this is Tommy Chung.
Hi, this is Carol Burdett.
All right, everybody, listen up. This is Dee Snyder from Twisted Sisters, Frangeland, Celebrity Apprentice. Yeah, you know me. And you're listening to Animal House Radio.
Hey, this is Larry the Cable Guy, and you're listening to the Animal House Radio Show. And if you're not listening to it, then leave the country. You're a communist. This is a good show right here. Get it up.
Yeah, it's Dee Snyder calling.
Hey, Dee, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Cool, man. Dee, I just wanted to say thank you right off the bat for doing this. I know you're a busy guy, and I really, really appreciate it. It's an honor just to be talking to you. I really enjoyed meeting you last month at the Chiller Convention, and I know our servicemen and women are going to love hearing you. So I really.
Well, I'm glad to do it. Free-flowing conversation.
That's it. That's what we're doing.
Good.
I love it.
Good.
The story you told, Paul, I'm with Paul Veneer from Salty Dog.
How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Paul.
How you been, man?
You were saying that you had moved. Don't say where.
No.
And you're not coming back to New York during the wintertime. You came back for a week and you had to shovel snow for 3 days. It was so funny.
Yeah, it was God just saying you made the right decision. We moved out. Our kids and our grandkids all moved out to the West. So right. My wife and I, well, my wife's a Brooklyn Italian girl, you know. She said, right. So my kids all said, hey, we're all moving. I'm to my four kids and our four grandkids. And everybody was moving. And my wife says to me, turns to me and says, I'm going too. You can come if you want to. I said, what do you mean I can come if I want to? Of course. This is my family. She said, I don't know. I'm going.
Yeah.
So we moved out there, and once you get, I love Long Island, spring, fall,
pizza,
best in the freaking world,
but pizza,
in between. If we lose sight of how tough it is,
right.
So I'm out there on the West Coast, and we built a house in the Caribbean, and right. Living down there on the beach, mm-hmm. And I came to visit my dad. For a few days, and a snowstorm hits. That big one was what,
yeah.
November, December, that hit
yeah.
Game, whatever it was, the
yeah.
First one. And I was out there, I shoveled the walk 4 times in 1 day. 1 day!
Oh my God.
And I said, I get it. I'm not supposed to be here anymore.
That's
okay.
It.
Okay.
Yep.
Going back to the beach.
That's
great. Oh, I'd love to be on the beach.
Yeah, I hate, I'm so tired of winter, man. I'm tired of winters.
And, these young people, they're listening going, it's because you're old, you know, so maybe, so be it. You know, there's plenty of things in this life that I now say I'm too old for this crap,
right.
And I'm happy to say it. I've been there, done that, let somebody else do it now.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, snow is good when you're little because you're playing it, but when you get old and you have to drive in it and live in it, it's a different thing entirely.
Yeah, it's beautiful to look at until it turns black and ugly, and they bury your car with a snowplow. That's not so funny anymore.
you do what they did to us when we were younger, and we wanted to make money snowplow. We would shovel snow, and then they'd pay us with a tin of cookies.
Wow, you undercut yourself. That's what you did.
Well, I'd rather have the cookies at some point, because I was like that kid in a commercial when he's running down the street and the mother's going, "Anthony, it's Prince Spaghetti Day."
I don't know what to say to that. I just know famously Parliament Funkadelics played Shea Stadium. Right. And Shea Stadium sold out, Parliament Funkadelics, and sold out. And at the end of the gig, they're supposed to get paid. And the promoter said, "You can have the money or this pile of cocaine." And the pile of cocaine wasn't nearly what they were supposed to be paid. They took the pile of cocaine. So that's like taking the cookies. You took the cookies. When you take the pile of cocaine.
My last show coming back from Las Vegas, I was coming back, and I was on the plane with the Funkadelics. They were coming back from a private party. They got $10 million for a private party.
Oh, wow.
Nice. There's a semi-secret world of corporate gigs out which are just insane, where you'll get Elton John playing in somebody's living room in the Hamptons.
Yeah.
Because they gave him $1 million for five songs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he goes, "Okay." I mean, even Elton John's going to go, "Okay."
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, a million? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Why wouldn't you?
Hey, Dee, you know, I'm a super fan. I've been admiring your work since the 70s and the early 80s. When growing up, the 80s was my decade. I know so much. But for, like, the men and women out there who haven't heard of you, which I can't see that there'd be many, when did Dee Snider know that he wanted to be a musician? How did it start for you?
It literally, like so many people of, you know, my age, I'm holding up the quotation marks. It was the Beatles' appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Oh, wow.
And just to show you the power of that appearance and put it in perspective. First of all, the first appearance of the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, 70 million people watched.
Yeah.
70 million in the United States.
And that was only four channels.
Right, that's why we had four channels. And and 2 weeks later, they played again, and 75 million people tuned in.
Wow.
Okay, but it was such a powerful thing.
Yeah.
We didn't have a TV in my house. My father had banned television.
Oh, my God.
He said, "We're going to get back to basics. We're going to read. We're going to talk. We're going to build puzzles." So while the Beatles were changing the world, I was building a freaking puzzle.
But the
power of that event was so huge that that was a Sunday night show. Monday morning, I'm in like third grade. I go to the bus stop, and people are just – everybody at the bus stop just talking. I'm going, "What's going on? What's going on?"
Yeah.
And they told me about the show. And just hearing about it, I right then and there said, "I'm going to be a Beatle."
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I'm going to be one of those things.
Yeah.
And I found out you couldn't be a Beatle. You had to be in a band, but it went from there. Just the power of that event had such an effect on so many people.
You know what's funny also, D, is back then, the hair was just touching the ears, and we thought it was really long.
Oh, it was insane. It was like the comments, are they men? Are they women? You're right. It wasn't even over the ears.
Yeah, it was
and they were wearing, they had bangs.
Yeah.
That was the big thing, that it was combed the front, and it wasn't slicked back with Brill Cream.
Right.
It was, you know, it was just loose and shaking it, you know?
Yep.
It's like, whoa. It's like going commando. They're going commando with their hair.
You know what, Dee? Considering the genre of music that you wind up going into, when you saw that appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show with the Beatles, was that, I mean, what, they weren't a hardcore group. For that era, I mean, coming out and being a shock to everybody, I guess it was hard back then, but
it was a different sound.
Yeah, it was, you know, and you know how many people that say the same thing, how that was one of their biggest influences getting into music from watching the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. It's just amazing. I guess for that era, that was hard for them because it was new?
Well, you know, I was just exploring this with somebody the other day about, you know, I'm an OG headbanger, you know, and I had the first Zeppelin album when it came out, the first Blue Cheer album when it came out, the first Mountain album, the first, you know, Cream, it wasn't even called the first Sabbath record. It wasn't even called metal back then.
Right.
It was called hard rock.
Right.
So, like you said, when the Beatles came, even though it wasn't metal, it was more edgy than a lot of what was going on.
Yeah.
And then I just found as I started to, you know, grow, I found my tendencies were leaning towards the helter skelters, you know, and the more edgier sound of all these bands.
Yeah.
And then even like, you know, when you go into the later 60s, the Monkees hit, and there was Paul Revere and the Raiders out there as well.
Right.
And I was drawn to Paul Revere and the Raiders,
who
always a little, if you go back and you listen, and it's been said that they were harder edged. You know, there's songs like Good Thing and Hungry.
Yeah,
they
Hungry,
had a little tinge with sexuality, tinge with drug references, and the wrist, down.
Yeah.
So, that was harder than the Monkees, and I just found that I was gravitating in that direction. And then, like I said, it wasn't even called metal until it was like 1973, four, bands like Sir Lord Baltimore showed up. And
I think
the first time the phrase was used in a review, Sir Lord Baltimore, it said in Cream magazine, use every heavy metal trick in the book.
Right.
And that was the first time the term heavy metal was used in writing, not lyrically. Lyrically, it was Steppenwolf.
Wow.
Yeah. I also found when Sgt. Pepper came out, that changed the whole world. That album changed everything, man.
It absolutely did. But, it was the 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper recently.
Yeah.
And I didn't own Sgt. Pepper. It was like, that was like a turning point. Like, are you that guy? Mm-hmm. You like that sort of psychedelia?
Yeah.
Or Hendrix, remember Hendrix?
He
shook it in their faces.
Yeah.
He played Sgt. Pepper opening his set in England with the Beatles in the audience before the album came out. They learned it backstage and they shocked everybody because Jimi Hendrix plays Sgt. Pepper for the Beatles before they released the album, their own song. But he did like an edgier version.
Right.
But the fact was, like, now Hendrix was coming around.
Yep.
There's hard rock being born. Cream, Paul, there's Sir Mountain. Like, all of a sudden, Blue Cheer. It started, this thing started to change.
Right.
And then by, 70, Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, and now the Woodstock Nation is coming apart at the seams as people are choosing sides.
Yeah.
And then some of us went down that path, and that was me.
Yeah.
Dee, let me ask you, I want you to... Do you find it funny the irony of how when we talk to a lot of American artists, singer-songwriters, they always cite that their influences were nine times out of ten it was an English-based band from the UK. And then when you talk – and I got the pleasure to meet Lemmy many, many years ago. He was sitting in the Rainbow Room. And when you ask him who was his influence, he says Little Richard. It's so funny how
– Well, everybody's influenced by something. The English were influenced by us, and then we were influenced by the English.
Yeah.
It is ironic.
Yeah.
I mean, and why do you think all those English bands are singing with American accents?
Right.
True.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Nobody's singing with an English accent.
Right.
The only person who was singing with an English accent was Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols. I mean, everybody else is imitating American voices because they were turned on to the R&B and the Johnny Cash and the early rock and roll.
Yep.
And then we got filtered through them and then sent back to us again. And so it's a very weird thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's so true. Twisted Sister had so many hits, and I got to ask you this because we had Slash on a couple of months ago, and I want to know if you feel the same way. When you're in a concert, or when you were in a concert, and you had commercialized hits that became she was like, we're not going to take it. I want to rock. Like when we asked Slash about Sweet Child of Mine, he said emphatically, I hate that freaking song, but it's not what I like. It's what the fans like. And unfortunately, we have to play it because usually the band usually likes the deeper stuff that you don't really get to hear unless you're a diehard fan and you bought the album and you listen to every track.
You know what? I totally disagree with Slash, and I love him. He's a great guy. He's a real deal, and he's a genuine. But this is where we differ. Mm-hmm. There is no feeling in the world like seeing an audience light up at the speed of sound. You can literally see the faces and hands. It's very subtle, but as it's reaching, you do these festivals and there's 90,000 people out there from the front of the back, all of a sudden, boom, bah, boom, and you just see hands just go boom and smiles for miles. That there's no feeling like it.
You're right.
So, is it the same song over and over and over again? And I could sing it. I don't even need a band anymore to do it. I have done it a cappella.
Right.
You know, I'm gonna digress for a second. I just was watching Comedians in Cars. I watched that show. It's great.
Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, it's
and
great
he
show.
Was talking to he talks about comedy. Yeah. And he was talking to somebody, he was talking to Michael Richards.
Right.
Michael Richards had lost his crap in a, if you remember, in a,
right.
a place where he started using the N-word
right.
and he lost his mind.
Right.
And Jerry said, this is not a selfish job. It's a selfless job.
Right.
It's not about you, the guy on stage.
Right.
It's about them.
Right.
Right.
The audience. And Slash did say that, but that is ultimately what it's about. It's about, you're not there to please yourself.
Right.
You're trying to please the people who paid money.
Right.
To come see you.
That's right.
It's selfless.
Yeah.
And that's what, and that's at the core it should be. And when we do this set, the guys, because I would write the sets. We were Twisted Retire now, but I would write the sets. And they go, why are you putting some of the deeper stuff? I said, they don't want to hear it.
Hmm.
They don't want to hear it. They're coming to hear the songs they love and
right.
know.
Right.
It's selfless. It's not about us.
Right.
It's about them walking out feeling satisfied
right.
that they saw the show that they wanted to see. And that's what it's all about.
I agree 100%. And also, it's the energy. Even if you do a song a million times, and every audience is different. And when you get that
right.
energy from the audience, you're tapped into the universe, man. It's just a feeling you can't explain to anybody unless you've done it.
Yeah, And if you're blessed enough
mm-hmm.
to have songs that the people the world over know, it's just, I mean, who are you? I mean, how arrogant.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying Slash. I'm saying
I'm
not going to play that one.
Right.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? All you dreamed of as a kid was, and all kids all over the world were dreaming of being lucky enough to have that happen to them. And now that you've had it happen to you, you're going to say, yes, I'm not doing that anymore.
Exactly. I know.
Dee, how does it make you feel, even though you said Twisted Sisters retired, when you, in the 70s and 80s, you're playing to one generation of fans. Now, if you do a show or if you get on stage, you got four and five generations, and there's kids that are in the audience that know every lyric, every song, better than the people that grew up listening to it.
You know, it's first of all, it's incredible because, you know, I didn't expect to be alive. First of all, it's so, like, you don't really think, like, you know, when you're in your teens and 20s, you look at 40, 50 and beyond is like, you know, it's like you can't even imagine it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and the idea that you'd actually be on stage performing.
Right.
But it's incredible. And that's one of the reasons why. And I'm still doing solo shows. I've got a new solo album coming out July 27th called For the Love of Metal, which is a contemporary metal record that all, like, people from Disturbed, people from Lamb of God, Killswitch Engage, contributed to the record. It's my voice with a contemporary metal record called For the Love of Metal. And it's available on Napalm Records now in pre-order. But Twisted, you know, it was one of my favorite things of all. Okay, I got to back up a little bit here. When I read a review of a Twisted show, and it was a reunion show, and it was really positive, but it said when a reunion show is good, it makes you feel young again.
Right.
But
right.
when it's bad, it makes you realize how old you have gotten. And there's a truth to it. I've seen some of my heroes up there, well, they shouldn't be up there anymore.
Yeah.
And it's sad.
Yeah.
It's a double-edged sword.
But I've also been to shows where my heroes were. I just saw John Fogerty.
Oh, wow.
John Fogerty. He is so 70-something years old. Mm-hmm. What an electric, rocking, powerful show. No, it's right. not, you know, Kiss 1976. It's John right. Fogerty, but right. he's still bringing it. Like every yeah. song is a little too fast, and he's still moving around the stage. He's talking to the crowd, and the crowd is on their feet by the end of the show. Yeah. It was so great to see. But then I went to see Elton John, and I wanted to take my own life. I mean, it was just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. It sounded good, but yeah. I mean,
Elton looks like he's going through the motions.
People up there.
Yeah, Elton looks like he's just going through the motions these days.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's retiring. So, yeah. you know, and so to your question is, when you are delivering a show and you're doing it right, and which Twisted did, and we stopped because we said, look, nobody beats Gravity, mm-hmm. and we've been doing this on and off for 40 years, and yeah. I'm still peeling my shirt off, and ripped, I was ripped, I'm eating carbs again, so I'm not anymore. but I'm not taking my shirt off. I said, I don't want to rock, I want a carb, but the feeling when you see these grown men and women right. with their families, and you see them smiling ear to ear and elbowing their sons and right. pointing, going, that's what I'm talking about.
Right.
That's what I was telling you about. That to me was the greatest joy of all to see that shared experience, to see those older fans, original fans, feeling like kids again.
Yeah.
And then also, and the band living up to the expectations that they had and that they hoped that we would bring and show their kids. So that is this amazing feeling, the greatest.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying. Like you had a great run, and you're almost like Seinfeld. He pulled the plug on his series. He says, listen, there's nowhere to go now but down. Most likely, but you know, I can't see Twist Sister having a bad show. But you pull the plug while you're on top, and that's it keeps the memory of the band from all the fans, and they remember something good. And it's instead of it's funny, you'll have 30 good shows, but they'll remember the one bad outing that you have, even though I know it's not possible. But
well, no, it is. Look, nobody beats Gravity.
That's right.
Show me anybody in history who has beaten Gravity. Everybody gets pulled down sooner or later. And you have to, a man's got to know what did Dirty Harry say? A man's got to know his limitations.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, I feel I know things are wearing out. Mm-hmm. They're wearing out, and I'm in great shape. I stay healthy, but you can't beat Gravity.
Yeah.
So, and one of the things that prompted me, and it was this, and this is not a slight on Slayer or Tom or Raya in any fashion, but it was very disturbing. I read a review, and it said, and Tom talked about the fact that he can no longer headbang on stage because he's literally damaged his neck.
Wow.
And he says, I defined myself. Right. As the guy who thrashed on stage as hard as the audience. Right. And now all I can do is stand there and groove.
Right.
And that, I said, that's what I don't want to happen. I want to get off the stage while I'm still, and I was, throwing my body onto the floor, crawling around, headbanging, thrashing. I'm out there performing. I don't do those things anymore. Right. It's like an athlete. You damage your stuff. But to be up there and to feel that, I just felt his pain saying, I defined myself by thrashing, and I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I think the heart.
And I'm still up there. It hurt me to hear him say it.
Yeah,
and I said I just can't have that be me.
I find also. So it's not so much the performing gets tiring, but I think the road wears you down. The road wears you down.
It's
hard.
Imagine.
Oh yeah, people are asking me, hey, Beloved of Metal, you're going to do a full tour? I'm like, no. And they're like, what do you mean, no? I said, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm not getting back on the bus or the van or the, I mean, the Stones are doing it. They've got private jets.
Mm-hmm.
They set up camp in the Alsatian Mountains somewhere in France in a big estate, and they fly out for each show in a private jet. Right. I mean, somebody wipes their freaking ass, for God's sake. Wow. So, you know, if you're on that level, awesome. Yeah. But getting back and going city to city
No,
it's not happening.
Nope. Hey, D, at our age, we're not too far from having somebody wipe our ass, but not for the same reasons.
Exactly.
We wouldn't even know they're doing it.
Exactly. That's why we have children.
Hey, D, what was the decision behind the dressing up the way you did when you in Twisted Sister? Was it just to get the shock and awe value of the performance, or to be different?
It was the era.
Well, the band came out, as Paul knows. The band and the band predates me by a few years. There's a great documentary called "We Are Twisted, Blanking Sister" on Netflix, which actually documents the fact that the band existed for 10 years before MTV found us.
Right.
You know, so right. It was a long, hard road, but. The band came out of the glitter era of the early 70s,
right.
David Bowie, Alice Cooper, you know, New York Dolls. So that was it was birthed from that. When I joined the band in 76, that scene was over, but I was just such a knucklehead, I wouldn't let it go. I was just like, I'm still doing it. You know, like, it's over, man. I'm still doing it. And the band was literally, JJ and the guys were literally, like, thinking of changing the name. They were trying to change the look.
Right.
And they had this, like, dunderheaded 21-year-old lead singer from Baldwin, Long Island, who still was living in the early 70s.
Right.
So anyway, they said, oh, well, you know, I guess that's what we're doing because that nut won't stop. And then it became, you know, hair metal. But it was weird. There was no hair metal when Twisted was first out. There was no Motley Crue or Rat or Cinderella or Poison.
Right.
It was none of those bands.
Right.
We were coming out of the very early glitter rock era of the 70s.
Okay, so we talked about the look. How did you get the name Twisted Sister?
You know, it's I pride myself on the fact that I wrote every Twisted song by myself. I created the videos. I created everything conceptually with the band. It was me, and credit to my wife, Suzette, who I've been with for 42 years now.
Right.
She wound up doing the costumes, the makeup, the hair. You know, she was like, whatever I was, and she doesn't like to take credit. She goes, don't blame that on me. She was an FIT graduate. You know, she's a very talented woman. She was just like, look, you know, you were, had this thing you wanted to do, and I helped you achieve it, you know, but that was your ideas.
Right.
So, the name is one thing I can't take credit for. And it was from the first lead singer, who was at the very start of, actually the band was called Silver Star in 1973.
Okay.
But they had this New York Dolls,
right.
look that they were going for.
Right.
And Michael drank too much. And he woke JJ up at like 3 a.m, woke him up from a bar. And if you think about it, it is a drunk name. He was drunk on his ass and he goes, JJ, I've got the perfect name. Twisted Sister. And JJ's like, what? He goes, Twisted Sister. And it's a drunk guy name.
Mm.
And the next day, Michael didn't even remember making the call.
Oh my
but
God.
JJ funny. Was like, whoa. That's money.
That's funny.
That is a name. And when I joined the band in 76, they were getting ready to change it. And I said, you know what? I love to be the guy who came up with the name, but it's that name's not going nowhere.
Right,
so,
yeah,
you know,
right.
And now it's like a household word. I just saw some woman slaughtered her family in England, and the front page said, Twisted Sister. And a picture of this woman with an axe or something.
I'll tell you, you know what, D, I loved you guys from the beginning, and to show you what a one of my favorite songs that you did, it might have been I know it was on MTV and stuff, which helped a lot of bands, but I loved Out on the Streets was my favorite Twisted Sister song, because and to credit you, I think you have one of the most amazing voices ever, because you had the ability to have that higher range and the lower range, and you just brought it every time. But that was my.
Well, thanks for appreciating it, and that's not a well known track. That's a deep cut, as they say. It's like when I met when we did the Jimmy Fallon show, and Jimmy said, "I'm a huge fan." I'm going, "Yeah, I hear this all the time." He goes, "My favorite song is I Am on Me." And I Am on Me is like from our
right.
second album
right.
with a hit in England, but nothing over here. And the fact that he picked that one spoke volumes of the fact, oh, you actually know what we do. You know the stuff. And as far as my voice goes, thanks for appreciating that. Cause, you know, when people sing my songs often, they come to me and go, dude, I didn't realize you were singing so high. It doesn't sound high and thin like a lot of guys sing. It sounds high and full.
Right.
Because I'm freaking roaring. It's how do you sing like that? It's kind of like letting air out of a balloon. You know, you just a lot of air coming through a very small opening, and somehow it makes sounds.
Yeah. And you know what put me over the top with you? Like, besides the obvious talent and the love of the music, when you did that whole thing with the PMRC, I said, this guy really gives a shit, and he doesn't take any shit. I had that. My respect level for you went up like 200% when I saw you. That you stood up for yourself and your music and other musicians. So I have to applaud you for that.
Well, thanks for appreciating it. And unfortunately, I felt a responsibility to the community to represent. I wasn't trying to speak for everybody, but I said if I can represent myself well and intelligently, I could show people that they are wrong. And I'm actually doing. I've got a thing coming up. I just did a piece, but they felt that like that was I'm doing a piece for Psychology Today. Psychology Today is interviewing me because they feel that there's been a recent study that this is true that showed that headbangers, heavy metal fans, are better adjusted adults than fans of other forms of music.
Oh,
Psychology Today is doing a piece on it, right. And they think that that moment in time where that perception of metal started to change was my speech before Congress, before the Senate hearings on the censorship thing.
Right.
And they said because people were like, whoa, you mean having a brain and liking heavy metal aren't mutually exclusive? And I said, no, this is not because we're only capable of understanding or enjoying this kind of music. Mm-hmm. It's a choice. This right. speaks to us. This expresses our frustrations, our emotions, best. But it doesn't mean we're idiots.
Right.
And honestly, it's wonderful because not a day goes by that somebody doesn't literally walk up to me on the street and just do what you just did, shake my hand and say thank you for that.
Right.
You showed everybody that we're not morons. And we're it's misjudged and misunderstood, and you can't just use one color to paint everybody and say, oh, this defines you.
Right.
No, you can't. Everybody's individual, and you got to respect that.
Yeah. Well, you know how it is. Everybody likes to pigeonhole everybody, That's the way nature of the business.
Yeah, yes, they do. Yeah. But, man, they've screwed up with me. When they were inviting me, I said, are they vetting? Is anybody out there vetting or reading the lyrics? It's like when these right-wing politicians use "we're not going to take it."
Right.
And I contact them and say, you do realize the first line of the song is, we've got the right to choose.
Right.
You're singing, we've got the right to choose. I go, wait, what? And I said, yeah, you're singing, we've got your anti-woman's right to choose. You're saying, we've got the right to choose. And I go, yeah. Why didn't somebody tell me the lyrics? Whatever.
Yeah.
Life is strange.
Gisella, you had another question?
Yeah. Are you going to be bringing back Growing Up Twisted?
Thank you for asking. You're a doll. I've got this great, amazing family, happy, healthy, intelligent individuals. My kids are grown, and they're all successful in the things they do.
Right.
My wife, unlike Tipper and Al Gore, my wife and I are still together while they're before.
Thankfully, right?
Unlike Tipper and Al Gore's children, none of ours have been busted for possession. Throwing rocks at glass houses.
That's because you were smart. You married a Brooklyn girl.
But we did a series, Growing Up Twisted, and people loved it. But after one season, they came to us and said, yeah, you guys aren't weird enough.
Yeah, they want people screaming and yelling at each other. That's what they want.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they and I were like, what? They go, yeah, we need you to be like more dysfunctional. Right. And I know, first I said, you know what? I said, we're not weird enough for reality TV.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
That's because a compliment.
You're right.
Actually, yeah.
You're right. I loved your show, and I loved Family Jewels because it showed families that loved each other. They're not used to that on TV. There's too much negativity.
No, they're not. But Gene's family was willing to act out situations that were zany.
Right.
Like, hey, the kids are picking up dad's birthday cake.
Right.
not in a box for some reason. I don't know the last bakery you went to that handed you an open cake on a platter. And oh my God, Sophie stepped on the brakes and his face went right into it. I mean, that's written down on a piece of paper.
Of course, of course.
And they came to us and said, listen, would you be willing to script some zany stuff? I said, you know what? No. Everything that happened on the show was our real life.
Right.
It's down to the boxing with my daughter and my wife out of a basketball court and all that stuff. But I said, if it comes to just pretending that we're something we're not going to do it.
Right.
Hey, D, I'm looking forward to the album coming out. And as soon as you're able to, I want to debut it here on the network. You've done a lot of movie producing. Any plans to do with that in the future? Because you did Strangeland was amazing.
Thank you. I've actually started. I got a new production company called Twisted Storm, working with award-winning producer partner Michael Alden, and we've got a number of horror properties to be announced very shortly. Actually, oddly, the first thing that we did was for a new children's animated cartoon show Netflix bought. That the whole inspiration was to create a show that parents didn't want to take their own lives while they were listening to it or watching it with their kids. I mean, and they said to me, Dee, do you have any ideas as to why is music on these kids shows so bad? I said, because you're hiring the people who didn't have hit records to make it. You're hiring the people who failed to have successful records.
Right.
And you're saying, will you write songs for kids? And the Wiggles go, yes. And so you get Wiggles rock.
Oh,
I mean,
as
I said, try hiring people who actually can write a hit song, and you're going to have better material. So this new show, we just signed a deal. It's just going into production. It'll probably be another year or so because, Netflix likes to release everything like the season at one time.
Right.
You do all episodes at once. But we're just doing a production, but I'm writing all the music for it. I co-create it.
Cool.
And hopefully it'll be a cool show. But that's the first thing that we're doing. And we've got a number of huge announcements to make in the horror world. Huge. We're just trying to deal with to reboot one of the biggest franchises in the history of horror. I can't even believe that we got the rights to it, and that announcement is going to be coming in the next month, I think. So,
cool.
a lot more surprises coming.
Oh, I can't wait!
I love the horror genre too. That's a fun genre.
And, you know what? It's amazing, and I'm sorry we ran so long. We were just enjoying to talk to you so much, and I know
it's a conversation, my friends. It's a conversation.
Dee, what can you tell us about For the Love of Metal now? That's going to be out in, you said, June.
Well, the first single for Metal Radio is going to drop June 1st on Napalm Records. But their pre-orders are going on now. Napalm's selling the bundles with the if you order, you immediately get a download, that kind of thing. And but the album itself will be officially released July 27th.
Cool.
It is an album of pure inspiration. Jamie Josta, the singer for Hatebreed, he was one of the hosts of Headbangers Ball for years.
Oh, they should bring that back too. That's another thing.
He's got a great he has a great podcast. And when I was on the show, he challenged me on the show to do a contemporary metal record.
Right.
And I said, well, who's going to produce this thing? He says, I'll produce it. I said, yeah, well, who's going to write the music? Because I'm studied in a different form of songwriting.
Right.
And he said, everybody. So right, we went into the studio, I accepted the challenge on our own dime, and we started working together. And then he said his phone rang off the hook. And people from Disturbed, Lamb of God, Killswitch Engage, and so many others came forward with songs and ideas. And I did duets with Howard Jones from Killswitch, and I do a duet, an anti-bullying song with Elisa White Glues from Arch Enemy.
Oh, wow.
And a number of, like, so when we did this record, and then we, but again, out of our own pocket, no record deal, just inspiration and passion for the music. And then we had multiple labels, metal labels, bidding on the thing at a time where nobody's getting legitimate record deals.
Yeah.
We were getting crazy offers, and Napalm, we wanted to go to metal label because it's a true metal record.
Right.
And Jamie said, I got the perfect title for the album. I said, what is it? He said, For the Love of Metal.
That's
and
great.
I said, That is the title. Yeah. Because that everything here was purely because we're fans of the genre and everybody was inspired and working again, not for a paycheck.
Right.
Just hey, we want to do this. Steve's doing this. Jamie's, this is awesome. Let's have fun. Let's make a great record. And it's just, I think it's really inspired and looking forward to it. And by the way, I will share one thing, and I've got to go after this. But I want to share. There's, you know, the state of the world. I'm a person who's always, I never sang about sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Right.
You know, I was a guy, I was had the middle finger waved high and screaming to people, you know, we're not going to take it, and right. Fight back, stand up for yourself, believe in yourself, you know, and don't you have to put up any crap for anybody. So there's anti-bullying messages on here, which is something that I'm really, I've always been against, but I'm really getting more and more fired up about. There's also songs about the current state of politics.
Right.
And when I say politics, what's going on in the United States is going on all over the world.
Yeah, it's global.
It's not just the United States. You
nope.
see it in England with Brexit. You see it in Italy.
Yep.
You see it. People all over the world are getting fed up with, you know, business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taking some pretty extreme measures, for better or for worse, to change things. You know, but
mm-hmm.
There's a song on the record called American Made, and it's not a nationalistic song. It's a unity song. It's inspired. You know, I was watching the Olympics,
right.
And I said, you know, look at this. We're at each other's throats politically right now.
Right.
But when our teams are out there on the field, we're all together in the stands, side by side, chanting USA, USA.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it's a family. It's a dysfunctional family, but like any family, we can fight amongst ourselves, but don't you dare start with us.
It's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're right.
You know, don't you dare start with us, because we may be fighting amongst ourselves, but we're Americans first and foremost, and American Made is that song, and this is, it's a huge anthem, and I think when you guys hear it and when people hear it, mm-hmm. I'm very excited to make this statement, because I think it needs to be made right now.
Right.
I think people need to be reminded that, you know, and, you know, if I asked any of you, you know, I think everybody would say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I'll fight with you, tooth and nail. I mean, as you see families divided over politics these days.
Yes.
But anybody fucks with the family,
yeah. You're dead.
You're all of us.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it.
I love it.
Paul?
Yeah, I was going to say, you'll be happy to know, don't believe the news on TV, because believe it or not, the world is not falling apart. It's actually coming together.
I hope so.
Don't believe what you're seeing on the media.
No, and people need to be reminded sometimes.
Yeah, but you're right, though. It's a global thing. It's a global event.
Because, you know, look, I just went through a tragic thing in my life. I come from a big family, and we have major, major issues between us, and we weren't talking for years, some of us, years, almost two decades. And then a tragedy befell the family, and my mom got hit by a car and did some horrible things. She wound up dying.
Oh,
and
oh boy.
On a dime. It was like, done. We're done. Okay, no more of this.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, whatever little petty BS between us,
that's right.
This is a real problem. This is a real issue. We're a family, and we came back together in a heartbeat.
Right.
And that's the same thing with this country. So,
yeah,
like you're saying, as crazy and as frustrating, and people wondering, you know, is this the end of civilized man as we know it?
No.
You know, at the end of the day, we all know we're a family, and we'll fight to the death for each other
if
we have to.
And that's the way it should be.
I'm hoping to remind people.
Yeah, absolutely. Dee, before we let you go, would you do us a small favor?
Is it involved?
Never.
What else? I'm not even going to go there. It's not so small, I want to tell you. It's a sizable. Well, what favor are you asking for?
No, we just need a station ID. If you could do a station ID for us.
Yeah, not a problem, man. All right, everybody, listen up. This is Dee Snider from Twisted Sister, Strangeland Celebrity Apprentice. Yeah, you know me. And you're listening to Animal House Radio.
Dee, thank you so much. God bless you. If you need us, we're here for you. Let us know whatever we could do to push the album and anything else you got going.
Again, when the album's released and you guys are listening to American Made going, damn, You sit spot on. This song is spot on. This is an anthem for the next generation.
Awesome. Can't wait.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay, God bless.
And girls, take care.
Thank you.
Great to catch up with you. Take care,
Schneider,
buddy.
Everybody. Bye-bye.